Welcome, everyone, to Making a Difference. This is John Ernst, your host, as always. Today, we're talking about friends about their business and what they're seeing in their community. My co-host, as always, Mike Salmon. How are you doing, Mike?
Good, John. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. It's playoff season for basketball. Started up, right? You know.
Might not be a long playoff season for Atlanta, but
No, it's probably not going to be. I have tickets, as you know, and I expect to probably go to 2 to 3 games at most, and that'll be the end.
At most, yes.
Yes, and we'll be on to the next season and probably new coach and whole new team. But anyway, I digress yet again. Today, last time we talked to a whole bunch of real estate agents, had a great conversation. This time we're going to talk on another aspect of real estate is the mortgage brokers and what people and I have assembled a great group of mortgage brokers here to talk about what's going on in their industry right now. I have four total people, and I'll introduce them individually here. Wendy Bryant of Anchor Home Mortgage, thanks for coming out today.
Thank you so much for having me.
You have a great radio voice.
Oh, thank you.
Wendy's done this before.
No, I can't tell at all. So, I have Lee Boggett from North Point Mortgage Company.
Hey, thanks.
Lee, good to see you again. We did a couple of deals a few months back. And,
absolutely.
What kind of deals were you guys doing?
Well, again, then closing deals.
Oh, okay.
And
okay.
That, at least that's what we can legally talk about.
Yes, absolutely.
You are an attorney after all.
Exactly. I can't discuss what my client talks about. You know how that goes.
Sorry.
Attorney-client privilege and all that stuff. And the other, we have Gary Lewis of Carrington Mortgage. Thanks for coming out again today.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
No, thank you. And last but not least, Mark Scarrett?
Scarrett
of OnQ Financial?
Yes.
Okay. Well, again, thanks for coming out.
Yeah, glad to be here. Yeah,
okay. I'll first start with you, Wendy. Tell me how you got in the industry and use your great radio voice here.
Well, actually, I was interested in the industry about over 3 years ago, and it was interesting because it was when everything turned. I had purchased homes when I was not in the industry in 2000 and I want to say three in 1997 and in 1995. And I can honestly say it was one of the easiest things I ever did at that time. I've had more difficulty making dinner reservations than I had getting these mortgages. I was self-employed and everything was very simple and they pulled my credit and that was it. And when things started turning and I actually became someone that was in the market for a house, I was amazed at the level of difficulty to qualify and how much the loan officer was invaluable to me in helping me through the process. And I felt like as the industry kind of recovered, that it was going to be a very wonderful career. And I really enjoy helping people. And I have a finance degree. And so that's how I ended up getting in the industry.
So basically, under the theory that if you survive and you're there when it all turns around, there's going to be a lot less competition.
Exactly. So that's kind of how I got attracted to being in it.
And that's what I told all my clients and my real estate agents that deal with us that, hey, if we can just stick this out, it's going to be gravy train on the back end, or at least that's what we have to tell ourselves. So, again, thanks so much for coming out. Lee, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Well, I actually have a finance degree as well from Florida State University, and actually went into software sales out of college and did that for a while. And in 2003, just really felt the calling to come back to the financial industry. And mortgages were really screaming at that time, and so it was a very easy transition. Learned a lot about the business, and was very busy for a while. And then things changed quite a bit in 2007. And like you say, it's kind of, it's been interesting. It's been almost a war of attrition with the folks dropping out of this industry, but it's really starting to come back strong, and I'm very happy to be in it. And I think we're going to see a lot of good things over the next few years.
Again, Lee, thanks so much for coming out. Gary?
Well, glad to be here.
Give me a little background on you.
Well, like Wendy and Lee, I guess I'm left or right. I'm an accounting major from Georgia.
Okay.
And
that's more like it now.
There you go. Go Dogs.
Yeah.
My first career was in textiles for 18 years. And then a friend of mine, John Stone, was in this business and got me involved in 92. So this is my 21st year. And the last five, I don't want to repeat. And looking forward to 10 good years. That's usually what we have, 10 at a time.
Yep. 10 on, five off.
10 on, one off usually. Yeah, exactly. Five was unusual.
Yes, it was quite devastating to the industry. Again, thanks so much for coming out. Mark, how about yourself?
Well, I started back in the mid-'80s. I'd recently graduated from college in economics and finance, and I wanted to do something that was along those lines. And I found I have a great love of economics, and it's helped me with my career. I've been here in Atlanta, I guess, for about 28 years helping people with financing.
And I just want to say I want to thank all the guests for showing up as well. Make sure that we recognize your companies. You know, Gary is with Carrington Mortgage Services, right. And Wendy is with Anchor Home Mortgage, and Lee is with North Point Mortgage, and Mark is with OnQ Financial. So we want to make sure we recognize those companies. Great, you know, all four outstanding companies, and appreciate your input today.
And it's interesting that they're all, for most part, you know, independent mortgage brokers as opposed to big banks. You know, I found with dealing myself as a closing attorney, dealing with the independents, that the customer is always a much happier person than with a bigger bank.
I'm glad you said that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing the difference. And I know, Lee, you were at one point with the big boys.
Yep, I was. Yeah, and we discussed that. It's the transition is, you know, it's been, you know, I think all of us to be in this business for a long time are looking to be at a place that has a high level of customer service that, you know, once we do a transaction with someone that they're out there, you know, singing our praises and want to refer us to someone else. And that's how we grow our business. And unfortunately, over the last, you know, several years, we've seen a little bit of difference in the larger, you know, a lot of the changes that have come across the board. It just seems to be that a lot of us experienced folks have gone to the smaller independent companies.
What is the advantage for the home buyer to with the smaller companies as opposed to those big ones that you hear about, you know, nationwide? Is it the customer level of customer service?
What do y'all think about the licensing? I mean, we're licensed versus the banks.
Yeah, I mean, the independent license, I think, you know, my experience has been I think many of us were started because we're independents. Starting from the top of the company, there are people that have been in our position maybe as loan originators and have built the company with that mindset as opposed to maybe a larger financial institution that a mortgage piece of it is just one part of that entity and they've got other areas, whether it be, you know, securities or banking and checking savings, all those type things. It may not get the focus that it would get in an independent type situation. I don't know if you guys agree. But.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think overall, and I don't want to speak for everyone, but I think the turn times at our non-bank type companies is much faster.
And I think that especially now with it's funny because the way I actually describe it is that in the years past prior to the crash, anyone pretty much could walk into any bank and get a deal. And now it doesn't work that way. It's complicated. It's hard to get approved. And you need the help of someone who can say, well, this bank will do your loan and this other bank will not do your loan. And if there are three banks that will do that particular loan, who has the best pricing for that client? So the client doesn't have to worry that they got the best deal because they're not knocking on individual doors. They're knocking on one door, and we're knocking on all the doors for them and seeing first, is the guidelines going to allow this to get to a closing table, which is always question one and not so easy to answer frequently. But then number two, if two or three people will get it to the closing table, who's getting it to the closing table at the best price and in a reasonable time frame? That's really, I think, the value of a broker right now.
I could ask all the questions, John. I don't want to hijack your show.
No.
I've got so many questions I'd like to ask, and if it's all right, I'll ask. You know, right now interest rates are as low as we've maybe ever seen in our lifetime. It's like a historic time. I remember, you know, not too long ago, you know, you get 18% or so. That was considered a pretty good rate. Where are we? Are they? How long do you think they're going to stay this low? I mean, are they ever going to get any lower than this? I mean, this is a very unique time.
Well, we hit our lows, I believe, at the end of last year. And I think the first 3 months of 2013, they edged up slightly, but still great rates. And just recently, over the last few weeks, we've come down to, I think, we're very close to the lows. So it's a really good time for folks looking to buy a home or refinancing. It's hard to predict rates. You know, you've got the Fed out there buying quite a bit of securities to keep rates down. That's expected to probably go into next year. I believe that for the rest of this year, we're going to have a very tight range. You know, you'll have some opportunities to get a great rate regardless of when you choose to buy or refinance.
That kind of goes back to when with the real estate agents last week we had. They were saying how, you know, there's just a great time to buy due to the fact that, you know, there's low housing prices and just incredibly low interest rates that are going on right now, and that people who wait around are waiting, you know, for a lower rate, you know, you're going to miss some deals.
Well, I'm positive that I'm the oldest person in here, and I don't remember World War II, so that was the last time we had these rates, right after the war. And if people are waiting for it to get lower, they're wasting their time.
Well, how are interest rates set? I get that a lot. We were talking just before the show with everyone about how, you know, people always asking about rates. You know, am I getting a good rate? And as Gary pointed out, as a closing attorney, it's amazing how every closing everyone got the best rate possible at the table. But how are they set? What, you know, how are these magical numbers pulled out of the air with a lot of people?
Well, actually, it's funny because that's one of the things that we really pride ourselves on. We literally teach our clients how to read a rate sheet, wholesale rate sheets, and we actually show them every single thing that affects their pricing and why their pricing is what it is. And we will literally hold up different rate sheets from different banks and tell them this is what, you know, your situation is and this is why it's this way. I had a gentleman this morning calling me looking for a refinance. He's an upside down Freddie Mac condo. It's not 3.25 or whatever you might hear on the radio. That is not the rate of someone who's at 120% loan to value and, you know, maybe has a 670 credit score. It just doesn't work that way. So essentially the way it works is you start with a base and then different factors hit that base, causing an increase in the rate. So where one person might have a par rate at, you know, one rate, another person might be a quarter of a point higher. The variance in terms of those hits is probably going to be pretty consistent from bank to bank. In other words, one bank and another bank are both going to hit someone who has a bad credit score. So we try to really walk them through and teach them so that they feel confident that this is what their choices are and this is why those are their choices.
And with the bad credit scores or the different credit scores, different banks have different levels, correct?
Yes and no.
Consistent.
Yeah, it's pretty consistent, actually. You'd be surprised how consistent. Yeah,
the adjustments are consistent. And to Wendy's point, I mean, when someone is advertising a rate, it's very difficult to properly advertise a rate because if you're doing it in any kind of media and you have to have it in by Thursday night for the weekend rates, well, there's no telling what happened in the marketplace on Friday to change those rates. So that rate quoted could be low for the industry or it could be high for the industry really within a 24-hour period. I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions is someone could call Mark on Monday and get an interest rate and call me on Wednesday and get an interest rate. And the interest rates may be different, but that really may not have anything to do with our two companies. It may have to be what transpired during those 2 days.
Very true.
Yeah, so that's one of the, you know, one of the interesting things that happens, and there are all sorts of other adjustments that happen. Someone could be quoting an interest rate without any fees associated with it. Someone else may be quoting an interest rate with the normal, you know, standard fees that you see in the state of Georgia, and so one rate may be a little bit higher, but that may not necessarily be a bad thing. You know, so it's an interesting market. You know, but as far as how that works
with the new good faith. You know, that reminds me of the new good faiths that had to be put out under the new changes. Are you seeing customers understanding those good faith estimates more or be able to compare? Or is it still just another, you know, just kind of mumble jumble that they're really just not getting?
Well, one of the things is Georgia is fairly unique. And for the longest time, we've used the term origination fee. I mean, that's actually just a buy down or the same as a discount point. Most other states don't use that term. The problem with the good faith is that it groups things into what are called origination charges. You could have no origination fee, but you still have origination charges. And for us here in Georgia, that can be confusing to the customer. Other states, it's probably much more easier to understand.
But a customer should review and compare fees among the various lenders. Carrington is not a broker. We are a lender. We're loaning our own money from a warehouse line. And so we have a different slant on fees versus rates. Everyone's got basically the same rates, and you need to understand discount points, and you need to review fees. And then you need to trust the person you're dealing with. I mean, this is a relationship business. Most people that come to me are busy and don't want to understand my business any more than I would want to understand how to do a surgery. They want somebody they can trust that is going to do them a good job and get their loan closed and move on.
We're talking with four very reputable mortgage and finance companies here in the studio, and I want to ask this question to everybody, and I'll start with you, Wendy. But as a customer or a homeowner looking to buy a house, what are the types of questions I should be asking my mortgage company as I shop around?
Good
look,
question.
Yeah, trying to figure out which company should I go with? What types of questions should the consumer be asking?
Well, again, I think, as a broker, there's so many options that you have. And when I meet people, sometimes they're even not sure what they want to put down on the home. The FHA, for example, loans have become very expensive. And whereas a buyer might want to put down 3.5% and do an FHA loan, they may really want to think about 5% now, because the difference, and you guys, I don't know if you agree with me, but the difference in the quality of the loan is extraordinary. So
sure.
If that other point and a half exists somewhere, again, I think what you said to your point, the relationship and the trust, we work so much on referral and chambers of commerce and things like that, because we want to set them up with the best loan for their family. And it is a very confusing environment. You obviously have to get your head wrapped around what your down payment might be or what it could potentially be. Do you need mortgage insurance or do you not? I think initially it's really qualification. What is the price I can buy comfortably? And I do that with a lot of people, walking them through. Said, well, up until this point, you can do a non-FHA loan, which is far less expensive than an FHA loan right now. Do you really want, unless you really can't find a house that you like in that range, you probably, want to stay in that range. So again, I think it's what would I need to qualify? I think the self-employed borrower is an entity all on its own. It's very complicated, and you need somebody helping you through it. And the other thing that we do too is, and I always tell all of my purchase buyers, let's get started right away. Let's pull the credit. Let's make sure there's no errors on it that we can fix for you most of the time for free. A lot of times we can go in there and say, well, you would have all kinds of options if you were 30 points higher. Let's look at what's on this credit report that might be a problem. Is there a credit card we need to pay down? Is there erroneous information, which is a lot of the time erroneous information? Let's get it off. And I actually raised a client once in 3 days 50 points for free. And all of a sudden she could do exactly what she wanted to do, which was a 5% down loan, which was not even an option on the table for her previously. So.
And Lee, other questions a consumer should be asking, as they search out for the mortgage company that's a good fit for them?
Well, honestly, I think the very first thing, and it's not even a question of us, but it's a question of the real estate partner that they're working with. If they've been referred to an agent from a friend of theirs that's a trusted person, and that agent calls Wendy because Wendy's their trusted person. There's a specific reason that Wendy is their trusted person, because they do 10 transactions a year, 20 transactions a year, and she's been reliable each and every time. Someone going into their local bank, no bash on that bank, but there's not that same accountability to make sure that transaction gets closed in a timely fashion, and the rate you were quoted is the rate they're going to lock you in, and the fees that they are going to charge you or the fees that you're going to get. The one thing I would say, backing up a little bit to that good faith estimate, I do think the one benefit to the new good faith estimate is, unfortunately, there were people in our industry that would estimate, send something to someone, say that was what it is, and all of a sudden there's 3 more percentage points of the loan amount added in there at the very last minute.
Go to the closing and the numbers
they weren't
in thought
enforced.
It was.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so that helps to regulate that. Unfortunately, there's still people that'll do things like, the person may need 9 months of taxes at the time that they close, and someone may send them an estimate with only 2 months of taxes because that's something that can change and would make, their estimate look lower than Mark's, even though Mark's fees may have been lower.
Sure.
And at the end of the day, when it comes time to close, all of a sudden those same taxes are in that other person's. They end up being more than whatever Mark had quoted them. So I really think that's the single most thing, you know, most important thing. And then I think having the discussion about, you know, it's one discussion I always have with borrowers is, let's talk the difference between what you qualify for and what you're comfortable with.
Right.
Because you may qualify if someone that doesn't have very many expenses that show up on their credit report, they may qualify for a lot more home than they would ever be comfortable paying because they haven't told us about their country club membership or their private school or something like that. And so having that discussion of, you know, I used to think it was a bad question because I felt like I was boxing a person in by asking them what they were comfortable with a monthly payment. Like I was trying to back into the sales price. But really, I think it's one of the most important questions is, hey, what have you budgeted for a monthly payment? So we can kind of figure out, even though you may qualify for twice this, let's get you near your comfort level. So.
And I wanted to add something to that. Lee's got it right. Questions I can ask a lender, I think the more important thing is when you contact that mortgage person, they should be asking you a lot of questions. If you call somebody and ask them what they're rate and they give it to you, they're not asking you near enough questions. We need to know, how long do you intend on staying in the home? How much would you like to put down? What are your goals? Would you do better on a 15-year? These are the kind of things that a good loan officer should be asking you before they give you a rate so that they don't tell you something and it turn out to be different.
Absolutely.
Selling you a dream. That doesn't mm-hmm. happen. Yeah.
I think everybody would be surprised at how little a quarter of a point on your rate changes your mm-hmm. payment. So you should really be concerned with what makes up that payment and much less concerned with whether you're hitting the bottom. Because kind of like picking the stock market, you're not going to hit the bottom every time.
Agreed.
But you're going to get a good deal.
Agreed.
If you're happy.
And 2 points on that. One is, I think the safety feeling of having a 30-year fixed rate is very important to people for their peace of mind. And I would never, you know, I mean, the peace of mind is a very valuable thing. But the average time someone's in a 30-year mortgage is about 7 years. So it really isn't out that 30 years. So to your point, you take a quarter mm-hmm. percent higher rate with a little bit of closing cost. If you move in 3 years, you are much better taking those lower closing costs than, you know, had you taken the lowest possible rate thinking you were going to be there for 30 years. So,
and the quality of the lender is so important. I mean, you talk about between most lenders in town, there might be an eighth difference. But how important is it to you if the lower lender misses your closing? You've got to reschedule your moving vans. There's other costs. You'll lose that. So I think we're all competitive. But going with somebody that is recommended by a realtor or someone else, asking the right questions is going to make sure that you close on time and don't incur other costs.
Yeah, when you have those delayed closings, and as the closing attorney, everyone looks at us like, okay, when am I closing? And we schedule a time, and the paperwork's not there. It becomes a firing squad sometimes between the agent and the mortgage broker and the closing attorney trying to get mm-hmm. it done in time. And if you go with a person that just doesn't know what they're doing, and I've been there. I've been at the closing table where documents were supposed to arrive, you know, 3 hours ago. The closing was 2 hours ago, mm-hmm. and I'm still waiting for documents. And that moving van is literally in the driveway.
Right.
I don't think that was anybody's loan that's in here.
No, right. No.
You're speaking hypothetically. Yeah,
exactly. and it's during the crazy times and during the high points. But you know, that family was stuck in a home. I think a hotel for about a month, about 3 weeks. Where,
right.
Oh, wow.
It was
a miss.
Yeah, that was a huge miss. And you know, I got the calls about twice a day saying what's going on, and you have to as generally as possible say just not ready. You know, I can't do anything until the paperwork gets there. But speaking of paperwork, again, what people, clients out there, what are they expecting to bring these days to qualify for a mortgage?
Well, basically, like I said before, it's worlds different than it used to be. It used to literally be like a credit score pull and a stated income and you'd go on your way. Now everything is obviously very documented. It's what they call full doc loans, particularly I imagine we're talking purchases here. There are a couple of loans we do frequently that have literally almost no documentation, which is streamlines, FHA streamlines. Some veteran streamlines, things like that. But even the HEART program, which has been talked about so much, you have to qualify for that most of the time. And you're talking about tax returns, pay stubs, bank statements. They do tend to look at everything, question deposits, things of that nature. Everything needs to make sense in the file. And you know, you literally are writing letters of explanation sometimes on different subjects that the underwriter questions. And it is the loan officer's responsibility, you know, to your point of closing on time. If that loan didn't close on time, more often than not, you can trace it back to the loan officer, sure, not asking for the right paperwork before the pre-qual letter, let mm-hmm. alone before the process begins.
Right.
And in really rough cases, if we have a borrower that's self-employed, that's difficult, we will underwrite on a to-be-determined property so that that person knows they're done. They're through underwriting. They just need to pick a house.
Forbes wrote an article back almost a year ago.
Great article.
By a guy named Mark Green, and it's called The Perfect Loan File. I brought a copy. Mike, John, if anyone wants this article, I'll be glad to send it to them. And basically, it describes what's different today than was before 07. And compliance is the key for us doing a deal. It's not the borrower is important, but not nearly as important as getting the paperwork correct. So everything's needed, and it's got to be in the right places. So when we ask you for pay stubs, and if your contract was written 2 months ago, we need a bank statement prior to making that contract, these sort of things. Those, I mean, you have to have them. You didn't used to. You could argue back in the old days and move somewhere else and still close your loan. But we're closing loans in under 25 days, and in order to do that, we have to have everything up front, start off right, and finish right.
And when you say everything, you know, besides your bank statements and your tax returns and the other stuff, what are other things that people may not think that
normally?
Well,
there's really three parts to a file. You have your asset, you have your income, employment, and then you have your credit. So the support of those three parts of the file, and then the last part is the compliance side of it, your disclosures. And, you know, the eight government agencies that tell us which forms to put in this package have to get signed, and that's the easy part. So depending on the program, Wendy mentioned FHA Streamline. That is the greatest gift to anyone that closed a loan prior to May 31st, 2009. If any of you are out there listening to this program, you have got to refinance that loan.
Yes.
Because if you don't, you are missing a chance that our government has given you to lower your rate by a substantial amount. I did one last week and literally saved this lady $390 a month. I mean, that's real money that goes in your back mm-hmm. pocket. So
does that extend the length of the loan, or the loan, the terms stay the same as far as the length?
Well, her loan, we redid a 30-year loan.
Okay.
But you can do 25, 20, depending on what the borrower's wishes are.
At the very least, people should at least inquire with their mortgage company or inquire with your company or any company here to, about the new laws if they're
Mike,
not familiar.
Mike, this is such a good deal. It's so good. It's a gift.
It's a gift. And, it's ridiculous.
And it's so yeah. hard to get people to understand because it's too good.
So people that are not even sure if they do I qualify, it doesn't cost them anything to pick up the phone and call one of you and say
no. I mean, you know, the credit score would be different among some companies, but there's no income. You don't requalify your income. If you're making your payment, you continue making your payment just with a lot less of it.
You just need a job.
That's right.
And if I can interject that, in terms of going back the 30 years and whatnot, you have a choice as to what you want to do. But just keep in mind, if you have a 6% rate, and someone sells you a new 30-year loan at 6%, you've done nothing but extend the term. You've accomplished nothing. Yes, your payment will be lower because you've extended the term. But if you go from 6% to 3.25 or 3.5, which I routinely, you know, see those types of rates thrown around with FHAs, and many of them have no cost, you've dropped 2 points or 3 points. That's the savings. So at one point, maybe they were paying $500 in interest a month. Now they're paying $300 in interest a month, for example. That's what you want to look for. Where is the savings coming from? Is it an illusion? Because obviously, we could all take our loans and make them 100-year loans. That's not a savings. That's an illusion. You're extending it. This is a real, true savings, a gift.
It's a gift.
It's ridiculous. Everyone before May of 2009.
Now, there are different streamlined programs. So, you need to call somebody you trust that can walk you through this. But this May, prior to May, one that you're talking about is just too good to miss.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
No appraisal.
Veterans,
and we're not allowed to increase your mortgage. You take what you owe now and add a 0.01% upfront MIP to it. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. $140,000 loan is $14. So now you have a $140,000 $14 loan. I mean, wow.
That sounds like a great deal. Everyone needs to get on the phones with one of you guys.
I wanted to add something, too. Sure. Another pickup that I've seen is in people going with a 15-year. Much more often than in the past, it's a wonderful time with rates spent in the high twos to low threes on 15-year. So if you've got a higher rate, you may not see the drop in payment. You may actually go up a little bit, but you're cutting your term in half. And there's been a big pickup in that activity with rates as low as they are. So it's a good time if your goal is to pay the home off or build equity to consider that.
What are some common misperceptions of the mortgage lending in today's environment, Lee?
It's one of the things I see on, different, whether it be a morning talk shows or little news shows on, any one of the 24-hour cable companies or whatever, they'll have financial folks come in and talk about, and they may be rounded in all sorts of different financial pieces, investments and securities and all that fun stuff. And they'll speak to the mortgages and they'll talk about you have to have 20% down on a mortgage. And I hear that all the time on these shows. And the only thing I can assume is these people have done very well and are talking about, they're only in the market for very expensive homes, million-dollar home that only would require a 20% down payment. But for the normal house, anything $417,000 less on a loan, you can do as Wendy said, 3.5%, 5% down. And I agree with what she said earlier about that. And it's funny because it's why you want to come to someone that's trusted. Is a month ago, we would be talking differently about the FHA loan than what Wendy said today. I agree 100%. One of the new counseling things we do is, hey, instead of 3.5%, maybe you can put 5% down. Here's some financial benefits to you for doing that. But in either case, you can get into a home at a much lower down payment than I see, spoken about on some of these shows.
I think along Wendy's line of fixing someone's credit, people don't realize how easy it is to fix your credit.
Sure.
It's not that big a deal. So don't, if you've had a bankruptcy 3 years ago, don't think you can't do a deal. I mean,
A lot of people have, and there have been a lot of short sales as well.
Yeah. That's right.
I know a lot of folks in that boat.
It's just not that hard to get it right. And the guidelines are very liberal along with the fact that if you've reestablished and if you have a job, they want you in a home. They be in our government.
You talk about a job. What about if they're self-employed? What do they need to bring to the table? Because that's a kind of a different animal as well.
You need to undo the file cabinets. I mean, that's a very difficult loan to do.
Important that people that are self-employed understand that we are all limited to use what they file on their tax return.
That's right.
And oftentimes, self-employed people may look for deductions and things that lowers their income. But we're limited to using what you report to the IRS. So when I have someone that's interested self-employed, I'm going to want to see the returns up front so that I don't give them bad information. And there are things that you can add back to income. But it's important that if you are self-employed to get your last two returns and let the loan officer take a look.
Can a family member help you out if say, parents or somebody else wants to help maybe help you with your financing or help you buy the house? Can you use their credit or their employment? How does that work?
You can't use their credit, but FHA loans commonly have what they call non-occupant co-borrowers, which are family members. So you can actually co-borrow with the son or daughter, and we put their income, put everything together. But it won't relieve a credit issue. In other words, the person that's going to be occupying the house still has to have reasonable credit.
And what is reasonable credit these days?
640 or above.
640 or above.
I don't, unless you disagree, gentlemen. Generally,
we're still doing 620, but I think that's going to be more and more a thing of the past coming.
We can go lower. It's just not. It's not recommended because it's not a great loan for that person. So right. The last person that I had that had a 623, we fixed their credit, and now mm-hmm. they have a 650.
Exactly.
So
it's not that hard.
It's not that hard. It's to me that. You know, I take so much pride in that. Am I doing the best thing for this family as opposed to putting this loan in right away so this can be in my pipeline right away? It's not about me. It's about what's best for that family. What's best for that family is to be over 640. If that takes me 2 months to do, so be it. But one thing I wanted to add, I think one of the – and you could, gentlemen, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think one of the biggest misconceptions about home buyers is that there's some wild variance between rates – between, you know, different sure. banks and what's not. It's more about the hits we spoke of earlier and how you personally are priced out. And the other thing is, and I know you guys will chuckle at this, we all have to document these loans.
Yeah,
okay, it's not like you're going to go across the street and not have to produce your tax return, which I'm only laughing because when I tried before I was in the industry like 4 years ago and whatnot, and I called and the girl said, well, I need this and I need that and I need the other thing. And I said, well, you sound very nice, but I'm going to have to work with somebody who doesn't need all that because I'm very busy. And she laughed and she says, you haven't tried to buy a house recently, have you? And I said, well, it was 19, you know, or it was 2003. And I said, yeah, I didn't have to bring anything. She goes, well, that's changed. And so I learned the hard way. So I always laugh about that because I was one of the people that thought, you know, that there were still stated income loans around at that time, which is very much not the case. We all need to document it all. There's all kinds of regulations that follow all of us, so we have no choice.
Well, guys, I think this has been a great conversation. I thank you all for coming out. Mike, thanks again for helping me out in this time.
I've been taking notes and everything. I'm learning. I may be giving one of these folks a call sometime soon.
Exactly. Again, everyone who's come out, Wendy Bryant of Anchor Home Mortgage. And how could they contact you?
The best way to reach us is to call the office, which is 678-679-7000. They can find our website on theanchorteam.com. And again, it's always a free consultation, and almost all of the loans that I do that are refinances are basically no closing cost loans. So it's worth it to have a free consultation.
And Lee?
You can reach me on my direct line, 678-409-9299, or at my website, www.leeblodgett, and Blodgett is spelled BLODGETT.com.
Gary Lewis with Carrington, how do people reach you?
We are opening a new office in Norcross. The company has 3 offices in Atlanta, around Atlanta right now, and we're looking to have 10 before the end of the year. So we're in a growth spurt. My number is 404-406-2276, and then CarringtonHomeLoans.com.
And Mark, on Q Financial, how can people reach you?
Well, I make it simple. I'd use my cell phone because I don't like to keep up with 2 voicemails. But I can be reached at 770-403-0089.
Well, great, guys. Everyone out there, you can listen to this show and every show on Business Radio X under the GwinnettNet Business Radio link, and it will be on my website, and my Twitter followers will – it'll hit there shortly. And, of course, you can call my office at 770-291-2009. And as always, 10% of my fee goes to the charity, the client's choice. You guys have a good day.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.